Hello, and welcome back to Slut PhD. I'm your host, Julie Fennell, and today I'm going to be chatting with my sub Art of Fiction about our shared lifelong hobby and interest of erotica writing. And we're going to be talking about how we get involved in it and the stuff that we do, and also a little bit about general tips and thoughts and gains even for erotica writing towards the end. A reminder that this podcast is intended for people who are legal adults in the area that they are listening from. So if you, like me, are coming from the United States, I expect that you are at least 18 years of older. We will definitely be hitting on some potentially objectionable topics as we talk about erotica here. So we're mostly talking about it with reference to other places online that one might read it. But expect trigger warnings here for like kind of casual intellectual mention of things like non-consent and apparently incest, although that's not what we've written about. I wanted to start by talking about our respective histories in terms of how we came to write erotica, and then in particular, I'm going to talk to Art of Fiction a lot about his background, and then I'll talk some about my background. I think his is more interesting, or at the very least, more typical. So how did you get involved in writing erotica?
Right. So for me, I think that I got into writing erotica from a mix of a couple of different things. Obviously, I think for me, the biggest starting factor was reading erotica. Basically, as early as I had access to the internet, I was seeking out erotica to read and finding it in a variety of different places. At the time, I think I found some stuff on some of the sites that we're going to talk about later, but also back then, I mean, there were just more websites. There was more variety, and often there were specialty sites that had, like, you know, their own little cache of stories. So that's one side, right? Like where I first ran into erotica. How I actually got into starting to write it more was probably through online roleplay. Initially non-erotic online roleplay. I think the first fandom that I did that for was Star Wars. And I think this was on the DeviantArt.com chat rooms back in God knows however long ago. Star Wars roleplay. And, you know, over time you would run into more mature subjects that you wanted to either talk about or that came up between characters. You know, two characters had a romantic connection. I should clarify. When I'm talking about online roleplay, I'm talking about this phenomenon that people have constructed online that's kind of a form of interactive storytelling. People take on a specific role or a specific character in something like Star Wars. You would, like, you know, create your own Star Wars universe character and they would interact. You write the voice of your character, others write the voices of their characters. They interact. That's very similar to tabletop role-playing in D&D or LARPing and that kind of thing. Or just similar to playing pretend when you were a kid.
Yeah, I mean, the people who were writing about this when I saw kind of official explanations were differentiating it from sexting or, like, people at least ostensibly playing themselves in various online chat rooms and claiming to be engaging in some sort of sexual chat with one another in that context. And this one, you're pretending to be someone else explicitly is the idea, right?
I think not even necessarily pretending to be someone else, because people very much were trying to play characters that weren't themselves or their own voices, right? Mm-hmm. You are deliberately trying to, like, I wouldn't say that writing a short story from the point of view of a fictional character is pretending to be them, right? And so I think that, like you said, like the distinguishment there between sexting and roleplay in general, I think, is that it isn't directed, you aren't both directing your conversation at each other, you're kind of mutually creating a third space or a third story.
So
I started off in that environment. From there, you know, you would start exploring more mature themes with other people. You know, if you're writing a romance story, you're gonna be like, hey, so what happens after the date? Right. And often the spaces weren't necessarily accommodating to that. So you would end up doing that in private messages or doing that somewhere else. I think the first place that I started doing erotic role play specifically, like that was the thing that I was looking for. It wasn't something else. Like it wasn't just like a continuation of other stories, it was on the old IRC chat rooms for bondage.com, which unfortunately died back in like 2014 with All Souls on Board lost. Yeah, that was the start of that, and that really led to kind of for years and years and years, I was doing a lot of that, and it ends up being very similar to erotica writing, right? You're writing stories, it's just you're writing stories with a collaborator, and then that kind of flowed into, well, okay, what if I just write my own long form story? Either because a partner is curious and wants me to write them something, or, for my own entertainment, or to post to the internet. I think I didn't actually start posting erotica until just a couple years ago. But I've been writing it for like a decade and a half before that.
And you move nowadays to
Oh.
other places then?
Yeah, I still do erotic roleplay for sure. I think that, yeah, IRC is gone, AIM is gone, AIM chat was also a place where people did all that a lot. These days I find that a lot of stuff has moved to Discord. Discord has consumed a lot of different communities, from gaming to fandom to, in this case, erotic roleplay.
Do you usually end up writing with the same people over and over again, or do you end up writing with people that you know personally, or is it total strangers that you find any on any given day?
I mean, it's mostly total strangers. It often ends up being the same people just because, the average quality of the writers is average, and you probably want to write with the better ones. And I mean, there's always this kind of sense of trying to find new writing partners because you want new experiences or you want to tell new kinds of stories. But you do often come back to the same writing partners because they're, if they're consistently there and you have an existing, like, the two of you write well together, you'll come back to that. Like I definitely have, I guess at this point, people I would consider friends in some ways that, we write together regularly.
But you've never met them in real life.
No, probably wouldn't.
where do you end up posting your erotica nowadays that you write alone?
I mean, I've posted a little bit of it on FetLife, as have you. The main place that I tend to post it, because the main type of erotica I write these days is fan fiction. I mean, I started off in the Star Wars fandom, so like fandom as a aspect of role playing for me has always been a long time factor. And so I tend to post on Archive of Our Own, also called AO3, which is probably currently the biggest and at the very least most used of the fan fiction repositories. There is, of course, still the venerable fanfiction.net, but I think most people have moved to AO3 because, among other things, it's both more usable and more searchable, which fanfiction.net is famously terrible to be searched. I tend to post on Archive of Our Own. There's other places as well that you can post, but that's my go-to.
What do you mostly tend to write about?
I mainly write dubious consent, CNC-ish. Like, I mean, this is one of the really fascinating things is that you end up with stuff that would absolutely be unacceptable in an actual BDSM scenario, where like the entire concept of like what there's like in erotica writing, especially online, there's the idea of con, consensual, dub con, dubiously consensual, and non-con, non-consensual. Where if we're talking about sceneing in a kink context, everything that writers qualify as dub con on the internet would be like firmly considered non-con. And I mean that's because a lot of fantasies come back to certain types of coercion that we wouldn't necessarily want to experience in real life, but that can be hot in the context of a fantasy.
And what do you think your main motivation for writing erotica is?
I want other people to enjoy it. That's always been the main thing for me. I think that for erotic roleplay, the drive was understanding what really worked for the other person. I wanted to tell like a really good story that clicked for the other person. And that was actually one of the reasons why I was hesitant to publish erotica, to a wider audience, because I'm like, well, if I'm writing to one specific person, I know exactly what my audience is. I can tailor my story to that, and I can feel confident that it's going to be received well. In a way where you can't really do that if you're writing to a wider audience. I think erotica suffers from a similar thing as comedies, which is that if somebody approaches it ungenerously, like if somebody shows up to a comedy club intending to not laugh, it doesn't matter what kind of jokes you make, they're never going to laugh. And likewise, if somebody's approaching erotica that they're reading from a place of insincerity or ridicule, they will always find something to ridicule.
For sure.
And when you're writing to an individual, it's much easier to know that your audience is engaging with it the way that you want them to. And with erotica more broadly, that can be more challenging.
How do you know if you've succeeded then? So if your goal is to turn people on or whatnot, then how do you know that you've succeeded in these different contexts?
I mean, in erotic roleplay, the way that you know is that you talk about it and that you keep writing, right? You're not going to keep writing like hundreds of words back and forth with somebody that you're not enjoying writing a story with. In the context of publishing erotica, one of the great things about sites like Archive of Our Own is that they've got a comment feature, so I can get comments from people telling me how hot my work is.
Yeah, you know exactly how much people liked it.
Yeah, and often you know which aspects people liked because they'll comment on that specifically.
And also you have a degree in creative writing.
Yes, I do also have a degree in English writing, so that does help.
Was writing erotica part of your motivation for getting that, or was it totally unrelated?
I mean, it's hard to separate, like, my passions for writing. Like, my passion for writing drives my desire to write erotica more than the eroticism does, I think, to a great extent. It's just a way to get a very engaged audience, you know, someone who really cares about what you're writing. They're committed to it.
It's just a form of attention seeking.
Well, not necessarily attention seeking, because the thing that I want the attention on isn't me. I'm trying to give somebody else a very satisfying story.
Okay, fair enough.
Right? Like, the way that I know that I've succeeded isn't necessarily that they're trying to, like, build some kind of connection or give me some kind of attention. It's what did the work do for them?
Yeah. Yeah. So my history of writing erotica is completely different than Art of Fictions. It was part of why I wanted to do this episode with him, because my own experience is so wildly different. I started writing erotica entirely on my own, and also came of age before a lot of that internet stuff. Although I could have been writing, I guess, when I was in college or whatnot, and I definitely wasn't. But as a very young kid, I was very fascinated with sex scenes and books, to the point where I would, like, literally fold the corners of pages and some of the stories that I grew up reading, like in Many Waters by Madeleine L'Engle. And when I was really young, so long before I'd ever had any sort of sex myself, I started trying to write erotica. Was this, I presume, also true for you, that you were writing these erotic role plays before you'd really had any sort of sex?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which is hilarious to me, that this is a thing that someone would try to do. I failed miserably. Were you any good?
Yeah, I was always great.
I actually still have the eroticas and stuff that I wrote when I was a kid, and I went back and looked at it a couple of years ago, and I posted some of it to the internet because it was hilariously bad. Me and a friend who had written erotica as a teenager when she was also a virgin. This was not long after 50 Shades of Grey came out, and we were joking, like, we think that a teenager could have written better erotica than 50 Shades of Grey. And I was like, well, you know what? We could test this. So she actually had a computer file with her ancient teenage erotica on it, which my husband had to go through 10 million hoops in order to be able to get to access on a modern computer, but somehow managed to do. And hers was pretty good. Mine was terrible. So I started writing erotica when I was very young, and I was very bad at it. I was always interested in writing short stories as my preferred format. Unfortunately, I think erotica lends itself very well to short story writing, especially a particular kind of erotica where, like, your sex scene, if it gets too long, is pretty uninteresting frequently. And so I liked the focused intensity that I could get in writing erotic short stories. And I also feel like erotic short stories are one of the few places that feel left in modern writing, where that's a thing that people still actually read, and general short stories have kind of fallen off a bit. And so, because I was really interested in short stories, I kept writing eroticas.
I am curious, because you said the thing about not writing very good erotica initially.
Oh, so bad.
How much erotica were you reading at the time?
Well, like none.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like that was probably the main problem, right?
I read some sexy books, but they
But
were.
not erotica.
No, and I still don't read erotica. So I
Right.
don't think that's necessarily a requirement for writing erotica because I
Well,
still don't read it. Yeah,
sure, but if you've had sex,
and I have something to draw from.
that gives you something to draw from, and if you're a good writer, you can draw on that. But if you like, I think I started off writing pretty decent erotica when I first started, because I had spent years at that point reading
Yeah,
erotica.
I'm sure that would have helped.
Yeah.
I just read a few trashy books here and there. That was all I had to go from, and I didn't even understand how sex worked. So my eroticas were terrible.
Right. And I'd read, hundreds of thousands of words of people fucking.
Amazing.
And I'd kind of discerned which ones were good and which ones were bad on my own.
Yeah.
And it turns out that the best erotic authors tended to be the ones who were writing both, like if they were writing well, like if the writing was good, also on average the sex was described more correctly
It
or
makes
more
sense.
accurately in my experience.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because you don't necessarily think of good writing as something that gets you laid. But
Yeah.
people who are good at one thing are often good at multiple things.
That's true. Do you feel like having read all that erotica before you ever had sex made you better at having sex at first?
Sure, yeah.
It actually was useful.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was really bad at sex too when I started, so I can't claim that I just understood either of these things from the get-go because I absolutely did not. I was a pretty decent short story writer from a young age, and so I had that going for me. But it was my erotica was terrible, and I also, was starting to write at a point when I hadn't had sex yet, so that was bad.
I mean, I think it gave me a pretty intuitive understanding of the idea that sex can have a narrative arc, and that includes foreplay, and that like the fact that I had read so many descriptions of foreplay, and the fact that foreplay is such a key part of writing erotica, like jumping to sex in erotica rarely works that well,
Yeah.
because you want to build. I mean, it serves the same purpose as foreplay does in real life. And honestly, a lot of that is just giving you good ideas, right?
Yeah.
Because when you hand somebody a blank sheet of paper, they don't always know what to do. Hand somebody else's body and be like, "Well, what are you going to do to turn this person on?"
Yeah.
Like, you don't necessarily know what to try. I think what erotic gave me was one, a willingness to try a lot of things because I knew there were a lot of things to try, and two, a list of things to try.
Yeah, I lacked all of the things that you just described, and it sounds like your beginning sex life was a lot better in that respect than mine was. Although my beginning sex life turned out pretty good, ultimately, but I credit my partner with that, not me. Because I was staggeringly ignorant. I will say that I agree absolutely with what you're talking about in terms of how years of writing erotica and also the concept of you're talking about like a narrative arc. I think as I got more into BDSM, which was where I really belonged, helped me a lot in terms of creating good scenes. And I've had a lot of bottoms comment to me that they feel like I'm very good at creating scenes that have kind of like this beginning, middle, and end feeling to it. And I think a lot of that comes from having this incredibly elaborate fantasy life that I then translated into stories for myself and other people ultimately. And then I moved from that to actually like doing the thing, and it was quite helpful as a way to translate fantasies into reality, but I definitely didn't have that from the get-go. And so as I got older, I started posting some of the eroticas that I wrote to FetLife was the main place where I was writing to initially, and that was great because even more I think than some of these other erotica websites, the back in the day, at least, not nowadays, but back in the day, you'd get like all of this instant feedback on FetLife for what people enjoyed. And plus, it was my friends who were there. So sometimes I'd literally see them like later that day and they'd be like, oh my God, that story that you wrote was so hot. And it was great to get people's feedback. Plus, it was FatLife. So, literally, I remember my most popular erotica that I ever posted. And I started getting like messages, even from almost like vague acquaintances that were like, oh my God, this story is amazing. And I was like, I wrote at the bottom of the story, if this story turned you on, post or send a picture of your genitalia from when you were jerking off to it. I had multiple genitalia pics on my phone as a result, and several people like tagging me on FetLife, which as far as like the reward system that you're talking about going on, that was hard to beat. Like, that was pretty epic to have like multiple people at like the fringes of my social network and total strangers who are just like, here. I enjoyed your story so much. Enjoy my pussy or my erection. And I was like, this is chef's kiss for the reward. You know, eventually, I feel like I, like many writers, I did this for so long that I started being like, okay, I feel like I've gotten good at it. It took me years, I hasten to add, of this kind of feedback loop. And also, when I was originally writing, I was and mostly for myself. I just couldn't find stuff that was about what I was into. And I mean, I'm sure I could have if I tried really hard, and mm-hmm. it didn't. So I couldn't find the stuff writing about the stuff that I was really into. So I was like, fine, I'll write it myself. But I found that the process of writing tended to turn me on so much that became like part of the thing. Like, I'd like write a few paragraphs and go jerk off, and write a few more paragraphs and go jerk off. And so it was like, this was very much a great feedback loop. And I was like, well, if it turns me on, I'm sure it'll turn someone else on. And the answer often turned out to be yes. I usually end up writing erotica on my phone, actually, because I associate writing on my laptop with something that's like too technical or whatever. I'll edit my erotica on my computer, because I'm trying to get into a more like technical headspace. But I tend to write it on my phone, because then it's almost like I'm like sexting with myself, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, so for the longest time, it was basically just a way to jerk off, to something to jerk off to. And then over time, I found that it really felt more and more like this joy of bringing a fantasy to life. And to this day, I feel like oftentimes when I write out my fantasies, it's sometimes even more satisfying than actually doing them.
Mm.
Because if I do them, it's not very long. I have such an intense fantasy life that it's very common for me to spend literally months like regularly fantasizing and jerking off thinking about something. And then I've put so much time and energy into imagining it. And then oftentimes the experience itself is between 30 minutes to an hour long, because that's how sex works. And so it's gone then. It feels like I have it in my memory, but it doesn't last. Whereas if I write it down, it's something that I can kind of come back to. And so I appreciate that element of things. And then over time, I started to get more into, well, not really into, but just accepting the idea that it'd be nice to be actually published and paid for shit. It turns out the paying part is pretty notional. It's like real notional. But I don't know, maybe like 2019 or so, I finally reached the point where I was like, hey, I'd like to figure out how to do this professionally. And unfortunately, to do it professionally, you have to stop publishing your stuff online, because it's quite rare for most anthologies to be willing to publish something that you've already put online in an anthology, which sucked because I missed getting that kind of feedback. But I was getting pretty positive feedback from publishers from the minute that I started sending stuff out, which was great. And then unfortunately, a lot of those venues promptly closed because COVID. And but I do have two published short stories, and I'm trying very hard to get an erotic novel published. So far, there have been no takers, but hey, if anyone's listening and interested, please shoot me a message. I'm looking for agents. I also have written lots of things that aren't erotica, which you have as well. We both write a lot. And I write rom-coms, I write magical realism, I write fantasy, and some erotica is just one thing in there that I enjoy writing, but obviously the internet has a pretty high level of excitement for it. I also have an English degree, although mine isn't focused on creative writing. But you know, long time of background there. I found after a while that there just isn't much femdom erotica from the woman's perspective. So especially femdom mask sub, which is most of what I write these days. And so I tend to chase that just because it's a hole in the publishing niche, and it allows me to contribute to a project that I'm very committed to, which is sexualizing, eroticizing, and just generally giving people good ideas for how to do femdom, while also turning myself on. What do you tend to write more of?
I mean, I just write a lot of general fiction. Also, I tend to come back to fan fiction as my like typical area, just because it's great to have a pre-existing audience. And I just have a lot of passion for other people's creative works. But I think that I'm always writing to an audience because for me, writing to like inherently, if it's my fantasy or it's my story, there's a very hard limit as to how much it can turn me on because it's coming from me, right? Like, I need there to be that other party. And I think that that's the difference between you being a dom and me being a sub, right? Like, as a dom, you create the fantasy and you impose it on the world.
Yes.
As a sub, I need to have that external factor. And so the thing that gets me turned on by my erotica is knowing that I've done a really good job and had an effect on somebody else.
Yeah.
If like I would never write erotica if I thought nobody would ever read
Ah,
it. Like I would not write a single sentence of erotica if nobody was going to read
I definitely would keep writing erotica if no one was going to read it. But that said, I can imagine few things hotter than the idea that I have imposed my fantasies on a large number of people, inspired vast amounts of kinky sex, imitating the thing that I like, and in general, inspiring people to do kink and sex more the way that I think that I like. And that I think is that's why I was talking about like getting such a thrill off of all of these genitalia pics, partly because like, oh great, my vision of the world is something that now is like in your head. Because definitely my biggest kink as a dom is controlling somebody's desire, and so feeding somebody erotica like that, it feels like a way to do that, even though obviously that's not necessarily what people signed up for, but it's not what they signed up for either.
Yeah, I mean, I have to do some truly elaborate mental gymnastics as a submissive to not characterize writing as an act of power,
Oh, nice.
right? Because it's kind of inherent that the act of writing is taking an idea from your brain, putting it on paper or on a screen, giving it to somebody else, and then when they read it, your idea is now in their brain.
Yeah.
Like it is taking up synapses in their brain. For as long as they remember that story, there's a part of their brain that is literally belongs to you.
Yeah.
Like you created the shape of it, right? And I have to very carefully ignore that part because otherwise it ruins all the fun for me. And so instead I try to characterize it as, if you cook a really delicious meal for someone, the food certainly does like contribute to their self-whole, right? Like some amount of their future blood and bones and skin are going to be made out of the food that you made them, but that doesn't give you ownership of them. It's still an act of service.
Yeah. So you never read erotica for yourself?
No, never.
So we were looking at some of the places that people post these days, and I think we've got a list here. Some of these things are extinct.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the classic number one site that you're going to find if you're looking, right, for the online repositories of erotic fiction, it's pretty hard to beat literotica.com. It's very old, and it has survived where a lot of other things failed or have vanished. And I mean, there's tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of stories on there. I don't have an exact number, but like they've got a bunch of different categories, and each of those categories has, I don't know, at least like 40,000, 50,000 stories in them.
But you were looking at the top ones, and they were very particular.
Yeah, we can get into that separately, but like there's lots of other places where, like, anywhere where people post writing that has some kind of lack of strict rules about not having adult content is going to end up with adult content.
Yeah.
So Wattpad is a classic one for adult fiction these days. Tends to be like treated as if it's the repository of really bad adult fiction from like that's its reputation. I've literally never used it, so I can't speak to that one. Archive of Our Own, which I talked about, where I post, is definitely a prolific source. Like I think there's something like maybe 80,000 or 100,000 explicit stories on there. And they have an absolute variety of like types of stories that they tell. I think Archive of Our Own is maybe the most permissible, like public accessible big site in terms of like what they allow. They allow a really broad range of things that might not be allowed on other sites. I mean, there's lots of forums that have survived where people post erotica. People post erotica on Reddit. There's subreddits that are for creative writing. There's subreddits that are for not for creative writing, but are for real life stories, which consist entirely of people doing creative writing. Yeah, I mean, like, there's an audience for that there. There's lots of sites that used to exist that have died, right? Just like how back in the day, websites existed and you would visit them in order to see stuff. Nowadays, everything is on like concentrated on a smaller number of sites. Repositories survive and individual specific sites die.
Yeah.
And as a result, I mean, I think there's probably still loads of little sites left over. Typically, they are for specific kinks. Like, you know, this is specifically a non-con one. This one is specifically for like a breeding kink. This one is specifically for hypnosis or mind control, right? Like there's specific repositories for that kind of stuff, but a lot of the stuff gets dragged back into the archives for or like the big collectors like Literotica, Archive of Our Own. Honestly, fanfiction.net probably has an absolute shitload of smut on it, but they also have some pretty strict rules about what kind of smut they allow.
Yeah, so when you went looking over this, you started looking at the top stories on these websites, which is fucking hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the fascinating aspects of having, like, a site tends to have an audience, right? The people who come to that site. And that can be self-reinforcing in terms of what kind of stories are there. While we were looking up stuff about this for this episode, I took a look at the top stories by views on Literotica, and 10 out of the 10 top stories are about incest. Which, like, if you've been on a modern porn site, isn't that surprising, given that, like, I don't think that any word occurs more often on the front page of a porn site than the word step.
Yeah,
Because,
actual incest is banned on
yeah,
porn. Yeah.
actual incest is banned, and the erotica sites get away with stuff that other sites don't.
Yeah.
Especially, I think maybe one of the big reasons is that if you're a porn site, you have to deal with
Credit card
credit
companies.
card companies
Yeah.
because streaming video is expensive.
Yeah, credit card companies are the reason like most of those types of restrictions get placed.
Meanwhile, if your site is like Literotica and it's serving written work, even if you have 100,000 stories, you have less server costs than if you're serving like three videos.
Oh, wow.
I mean, like, not that's a bit of an exaggeration, but like it's close to that, right? Like text is so much cheaper,
Makes sense.
both to store, to send, and like you don't have to worry about the participants, right? Like you never have a situation where you get a subpoena from the FBI because one of the videos that you have hosted on your site has a minor in it, and now you're the subject of a criminal investigation because how did that video end up there? All that jazz.
Makes sense. Legal costs a lot lower.
Legal costs lower, and the financial costs are because you're not bound to the credit card processors.
Yep.
You can just allow content that credit card processors wouldn't. And I think that online erotica often serves more niche and more intense kinky narratives because the generic ones get served by other content, right? Like if you want just generic smut, you can literally get a romance novel from the library,
That's true.
right? But traditional romance novel publishers, there's lots of stuff that they won't allow in their stories, right? I very much doubt that you can find a romance novel on the shelf of a library that has incest as its primary relationship dynamic. I mean,
Unless it gets sold as a fantasy novel.
yeah, or like, or
Game
like,
of Thrones.
or like historical, or like, Lot and his daughters from the Bible,
King Arthur.
King Arthur, yeah, but like not as a casual thing.
Right.
And so people go to erotica sites for that, and it ends up serving niche audiences and then reinforcing niche audiences.
What were the top ones on AO3? Did you look?
No, not specifically, but definitely one of the big ones that arguably originated, not necessarily on AO3, more on FFNet and a couple of other places. But they're responsible for the whole ABO, Alpha, Beta, Omega kink thing, which has truly taken the fan fiction world by storm and has begun to intrude on the romance novel genre. And it's a whole thing, but I mean, my cynical take is that similarly to how porn sites have that whole like step whatever as kind of like more accessible version of incest for people who don't want actual incest, in some way I suspect that ABO dynamics are basically furries for non-furries.
Yeah, we he made the Claude, the artificial intelligence, summarize what ABO was for me because I, in my charming naivete, did not know.
Just to briefly explain, basically, it I think it maybe came out of werewolf smut. I can't remember. There's like deep origins in this in the fan fiction lore. But you got your alphas, you got your betas, you got your omegas. One of the big reasons where it came out of was that they wanted to write stories about men fucking men, and then getting impregnated because that was a kink. And so they invented this entire alternate universe setting where, there's these three genders, alpha, beta, omegas, and they are independent of like biological sex. But they do have inherent kink roles because people love their inherent kink roles. But you couldn't use the inherent kink roles that vanilla people believe in, which is gender, because you're writing men fucking men, because most of the erotica writers are women. As a result, you needed to come up with a different source of that, of biological determinism.
I am sorry to sound so, to laugh at all of this so much. I'm sure that there's plenty of people who would find everything that I write to be hilarious. And this feeds it very nicely to the next section that I want to talk about here about what makes good erotica. And one of the biggest sort of chasms, I think, in erotica writing and reading is people who like their erotica to be very realistic, like very true to life. And people who want their erotica writing and reading to be as far from real life as possible. And people want dragon smut, people want tentacle porn, people want vampire porn, werewolves. Like, there's a whole universe of this very unrealistic stuff. Then there's like the hazy place in there. Like, I've read like Sookie Stackhouse novels. It's the basis of a TV show True Blood, right? Where it's like humans fucking vampires. And it reads, at least in the context of the novels, as being kind of gritty and plausible-ish, let's say. Like, so there's a place where you try to keep your erotica realistic within the constraints of the thing you've been given. Whereas, there's a whole other level of erotica that's like, well, you fucked them until they were dead and then they came back to life, right? Like this whole other level of unrealism. And then there's erotica that tries to be excessive within the context of real life. So it's like these things that seem plausible, but somehow our own sex lives just never quite get there.
Yeah, and I mean,
And then there's hyper realistic erotica, which I often write, where it's like, oh, but erections fail sometimes.
and I think that the thing is that different people get that sense. I think everybody on some level is looking for a degree of verisimilitude, and also a degree of not. And it depends on where you're trying, like what are you trying to escape? And so for a lot of people, I think, for instance, where I think the ABO dynamic comes from is that people want to play with dynamics of coercion, compulsion, and that type of thing. But using real life sources of that brings in baggage.
Yeah.
Because people have these experiences, people have these traumas. And so you create dynamics that are reflective of the energy of the real life dynamics, but aren't the actual real life dynamics, so that people can safely explore their kinks. And I think that to a great extent, I think that's really healthy and reasonable.
Totally.
Absolutely, go for it. Like, if you want to explore something that has resonance for you, but you want to take the poison out of it, why not?
Why not?
Sometimes maybe be careful about how much of the poison you actually took out and like what poison you're reinforcing, but it's complicated. But yeah, I mean, like, I think that you can write an incredibly realistic sex scene set between two people fucking on top of a dragon,
or
set between like a human getting fucked by a werewolf. And you can also write an extremely exaggerated sex scene between two humans in the year 2024 on a bed.
Exactly.
Realism is a complicated term.
Realism is relative. Yeah, so I actually went to an erotica writers con back in 2017, which ironically I didn't really go to learn erotica writing. I went because my novel starts off at an erotica writers con, and I went to go to the con as a means of researching for my novel, but it meant that I also did end up taking a couple of erotica writing classes while I was there. And one of them was taught by Cecilia Tan, who's quite a very well-known BDSM erotica writer. And she was a fantastic teacher. She's an MFA in writing, which really, again, speaks to the fact that writing erotica is just fucking writing. Emphasis, I guess, a little bit on the fucking writing part. But, you know, she was very emphatic.
Well, writing fucking.
Writing fucking, right. She was very emphatic that writing erotica isn't different than any other type of writing. You just need interesting characters engaging with each other in interesting ways, and you need some sort of conflict that gets resolved by the end of your story. There needs to be some sort of tension beyond just sexual tension, basically. And I, you know, another phrase that came up there was realism versus verisimilitude, which is became the title of one of the chapters in my novel, because my novel is metafiction. And so my novel tackles a lot this conflict between what's real versus what seems real. You know, that's what verisimilitude is, right? About what feels real or seems real versus like what actually is real. You know, it's the same way that you probably wouldn't want to watch a movie where people actually talked the way that people talk. And that would probably feel fake to you if you did, because that's just how we process that type of information. Likewise, it's hard to write sex scenes that are too close to real life, typically. So, for example, I tried to turn one of my best scenes that I ever did into an erotica, and it was especially ironic in this case because I did it with another guy who writes a lot of erotica. And when I tell it to people, like, as a story of, like, a sort of sexual stunt story, people are very engaged with it. And it's very funny, and it's pretty wild and out there. And when I tried to write it as a story, it fell flat. Mm. And part of why it fell flat was because I was trying too much to be close to what had actually occurred. And there just wasn't enough tension and conflict in it for it to really hold on well as a story. But I think the other problem was that I was invested in trying to keep it realistic. And again, it was so far out there already that, like, why did I, it didn't need to be made more realistic at that point.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that comes back to the fact that often reality is unrealistic.
Yes, exactly.
And also that, so we'll often be like, oh, well, this isn't true to how real life is done. But for instance, like, coming back to, you know, in dialogue, you don't write ums and ahs.
Right.
One of the reasons why that's true is that we don't actually hear them.
Right.
Like, when you're talking to someone, if you recorded a conversation between yourself and a friend, or if you recorded a podcast and then listened to it back,
yeah,
you will be astonished.
Astonished.
To hear how many times you use the word
But it's not just how many times I do. It's the other person who I'm talking to, and I just don't notice. Like, oh, that person doesn't say that much. And then it turns out, oh, wow, they actually do quite a lot.
Yeah, and, like, we don't experience reality the way it is, whatever it means to have reality be the way that it is. We experience reality the way that we experience and remember it.
Yes, And yeah, and related to that too, I think, is writing point of view erotica, which is fascinating and tricky because, on the one hand, you can try as a writer to be accurate, because frequently, if you end up writing from other types of people's point of view, like even if you are a like lesbian writing lesbian erotica, right? Like you still only have your own personal experience and perspective, and as much as you can talk to other people about theirs, that's what you're stuck with. But especially if you're, say, a straight woman trying to write from the perspective of a straight man in a sex scene, you have to really go pretty far out of your way to try to get at what it is that they're into and find attractive and appealing in an encounter. So for me, one of the tells that I often come to in this is whenever I read fiction that's about lesbians, and it's supposedly written from a lesbian's perspective or whatever, and they don't talk about women's arms, which tends to be if not a fascination among all lesbians, from at least enough of them that I expect that, one out of your two characters in your scene is going to kind of have a thing about this. And like when I read fiction that's written by lesbians, they tend to, in fact, engage with this. But people who aren't lesbians who are writing like lesbian romantic or erotic fiction often fail to get this, where they're like, oh, it's about tits. I'm like, well, sure, there are boobs involved, but this is not all of it. And like as a general average thing, right, like men tend to be more into visual attraction, and women tend to be more into kind of a whole package and smells and lots of other complicated things. And so if you write that in your story, then you can make those characters more convincing to real life. But there's a huge asterisk on this, which is that depending on who you're writing for, maybe that doesn't matter. Because if your audience doesn't know this or doesn't believe this, then it feels untrue to them.
I think that's where it comes to audience, right? Because sure, I hear you on the, some percentage of lesbians would have a focus on the arms, right?
Right.
Which is very important if you're writing erotica that is meant to feel real to lesbians like that.
Yes.
But if you're writing your lesbian fiction for the people that lesbian porn is made for,
Yep.
which is men,
Yep.
then you're going to focus on the tits because the men are interested in the tits.
Exactly.
Right. So there's the audience, there's the point of view, all of these things get kind of complicated. I mean, one of my favorite examples of how point of view becomes this fascinating thing in fiction is that in online erotica, both in fan fiction and in original erotica stories, there's this entire concept of what's called Y slash N or your name fic, where it's in second person explicitly with your name being the person that the other character is engaging with.
Nice.
I haven't read very much of it, so I can't speak to how it's written or if it literally has Y slash N in each time that where the named character would be. But hey, that's point of view on a whole different level.
It is. I mean, I love writing erotica from second person. Well, it's like a combo of second slash first person, really, right? Because it's like I'm doing something to you. And I also often, another reason why I enjoy writing erotic short stories is because then I have no motivation whatsoever to describe you. And so, like, you can be whoever's reading it. And I like that type of engagement. But you can't really get away with that in a novel very well, for example.
Oh, I mean, most of Harrow the Ninth is written in second person,
Yeah,
and it's excellent.
I disagree. which, I mean, in general, obviously, you really have to think about your audience when you're writing anything, but I think perhaps even more so writing erotica. So it's, because a lot of times we end up writing erotica that's specifically for ourselves, for our partners, for some particular group who of people who maybe is like us or maybe isn't, right? So it's like, are you a bi-curious woman who's never actually had sex with a woman who's writing a lesbian story for the interest of other women who've never had sex with women, right? Who are bi-curious? That's a very specific, like, sort of subgroup type of thing versus writing for people who are just like kind of a general audience, which I'm not even sure erotica mostly gets read by general audiences. I'm not sure how much that's true, but like my stories are published in kind of general anthologies that I have no idea when people read them if they thumb through specifically looking for the subject matter or are they just looking for any interesting story. But obviously, you have to have a more general sense at that point than if you're just writing for your partner to turn them on. And I found if I'm writing as myself, which increasingly I would say I don't do these days because I'm typically writing from the point of view of a character. But if I'm writing as myself, I've generally found that the key to writing great and really hot erotica is to try to find places of vulnerability in myself. And part of why it can be easier to do that as a character is because your character doesn't have to be this vulnerable version of yourself. And sometimes to do that, I even go like on another level and externalize myself into a character to imagine that my character is writing the story so then I don't have to feel so vulnerable in writing it. But I think it's really easy to slip into not being so vulnerable when writing erotica. In general, one of my tips in writing erotica is always that porn is about what people do and erotica is about how they feel doing it. Obviously, a massive oversimplification, but there's a lot that's about the emotional experience of engaging with other people that is how erotica tends to function. Although I don't, is that as true in the erotic role play? Like, has that become more about what people are doing and less about how they feel?
It's tricky, but I would say that for me, I can only speak to what I write, that it's so much about what people think, right? For me, the most satisfying erotica I write is probably 80% not erotica, because you need that much to set up the psychological dynamics that make the porn hot. Like, this is something that I struggle with actual porn, where like I can't just watch a video of two people fucking because I don't understand what the emotional stakes are. Like, what's the story here? Why are they fucking?
What's the appeal?
How do they feel about it?
How do they feel about it?
And so, like sometimes you'll have two different porn videos that each have like a 2-minute intro. And I'm like, okay, but which of these stories is actually compelling? Which is where having good actors in porn is very helpful.
So we conclude this with a couple of fun writing tips and games for engaging with erotica. I encourage you, if this is something that you're interested in doing, to experiment with writing erotica while you're super aroused versus not. I found that the product often will change a great deal if, say, you jerk off a little bit and intentionally don't come, and then go write some, and then jerk off a little more and intentionally don't come, and then go write some more, and see what you come up with. And I think for some people, the product there starts to really decay because their brain isn't working very well. But for some people, I think it's almost like a drug, right? Where now you've loosened up something in your head that was previously holding you back, basically. And so I think it's fun to play with that. I also think it's really fun to write directly for a partner, which I have done before, and both as something that I've done and something that I've assigned my subs to do. I know I stumbled upon a kink that I didn't even know that I had when previous sub, I told him to write me a story. English wasn't even his first language, and he was like, "I don't know that I'm going to do a great job here." And I was like, "That's fine, I'll just edit it." And he actually did a surprisingly good job. And then I edited it, and I was like, I didn't realize that I loved the idea of editing someone's fantasy. Like, it wasn't just editing the actual writing, but the idea of editing somebody's fantasy that was super hot. But I think it's fun to write erotica for somebody else. So, we've done a lot of writing stories back and forth for one another. And I give you assignments for how to do that. And then whenever I'm like, I want to write something, I'll be like, what inspires you right now? Because you will never tell me, you're never going to give me a list of
No,
what to write,
absolutely not.
which is problematic when I'm like, but I want to write, but I need inspiration.
Like, you're the dumb. You're supposed to already have the
Supposed to
ideas.
already have the ideas,
So
right?
anyway.
No, it's okay. You've always given me inspiration when I've asked. You just were very, you're very cutely subby about
Yeah.
it.
And I mean, also, unfortunately, I can't serve that editing kink that you have because what I write is already so good that there's nothing left to edit.
That's true, but I will say that you got much better at writing for me over time. Like, when you first started writing for me, it was a pretty long way from my idea of what I want that's for me. Like, it was good writing, but it wasn't like the erotica that I wanted that was for me. And so you took feedback really well. And now at this point, I feel like you write erotica for me that feels like it came out of my own head, basically. Like, you found the place that was so much within my own style that reading it, I would struggle to guess if I didn't know, like, which one of us had written it.
I think that comes from my erotic roleplay background.
That makes sense.
If I'm doing my job right, from my point of view, as someone who does erotic roleplay, I am writing the fantasy that the person wishes they could write for themselves.
Right.
Right. Like, sometimes people will be like, oh, I want to read a story about this, but I don't want to have to write it. And I'm like, cool, I'll write it for you. Yeah. I got it. And I mean, that's also very similar to the approach that I take when I service top, right? Yeah. Like, I want to ask the questions that let me understand what this person wants to experience. And then I tell them that story.
Yeah. I think another good thing about writing erotica, like, especially as a sub in that context, is learning to notice what pleases your dom, like details that maybe you could never have noticed in real life because everything's going too fast. It's like, oh, but wouldn't it be hotter if X? Like, adding in some of those elements, I think, can be a nice touch as well there. And then the last one, which we actually haven't played with very much, is writing erotica back and forth. So, like, the same way that you're talking about doing the erotic roleplay, but, you know, like, with the intent of you maybe are playing yourself, or maybe not, right? But, like, writing back and forth with someone that you know well, and telling a story together that way. I think also I've thought about doing that. I haven't done it, but I've thought about doing that as, like, an ongoing tale that I thought would be really interesting. It's like, all right, so we have, like, these externalized hero versions of ourselves. What are they doing today?
Yeah.
I haven't tried that, but I think it would be amusing to have, like, the superhero sex version of myself and, like, interacting with, like, a partner in an ongoing way. It's just like, all right, we picked up the tail. We left it over here the other day. What are they up to nowadays? And I definitely personally find it very arousing to tell stories even in that are oftentimes very removed from myself, which I don't know if that's true for everybody, but do you find it arousing to tell stories that are very far removed from yourself? Like, you write about, like, Spider-Man or whatever, and, like, it's way over there and it's still hot.
Yeah. I mean, I think that writing about characters that are far from myself is actually more interesting because and I mean, this comes back to whenever people are playing, like, Dungeons and Dragons and they're like, I'm going to play a human warrior. And I'm like, I could literally go buy a sword and swing a sword in my backyard right now. Why in the world would I pretend to be a human warrior? I can just do that. I want to live in the fantasy of being able to throw fireballs while flying. Right? Like, likewise in erotica, I want to explore aspects of dynamics that I can't explore because of who I am and because of the shape of my body, the shape of myself as a person, because the dynamics are still hot and interesting. I mean, I think this is also an aspect that I really admire in good science fiction, right? Good science fiction, or the best science fiction from my point of view, is set in a science fiction setting largely so that it can get rid of some specific inherent aspect of the real world that is affecting something about humanity and be like, okay, well, how does humanity and how do people interact without this implication? Right? Like, we're not just setting this on Mars because Mars is cool.
Yeah.
We're setting this on Mars to see, like, okay, well, how do two astronauts interact with each other on the surface of Mars, knowing that Earth has vanished and there is no going back?
Yeah.
Right. And you can get an incredibly human interaction because you've removed that background of context that is always present. An erotica writing game that I would suggest, or writing exercise, is write a scene, something that you've recently done. Write it from your point of view, and then write it from your dom's point of view, or your
partner's
point of view. And ideally give that second one to your partner
Oh, yeah.
and see what how close it is to what
Their own
they to their own
experience.
experience. If you're with someone who's also a writer, absolutely fascinating to both simultaneously write up your side of an experience that the two of you had together and exchange those.
Yeah.
This may lead to breakups, so be careful. But like, I mean, a classic writing exercise is write something in first person, second person, and third person.
Yeah.
So like, write it from your perspective, write it from the other person's perspective, and hey, write it from the perspective of somebody watching the scene.
Oh, I've never tried this. That's great advice. I was very focused on trying to get the perspective of bisexual men as I was writing my erotica novel. And so I would just sit down with all these dudes who I had intimate relationships with and just like, all right, so tell me about sex with men and tell me about sex with women and what does it feel like? Because I would like to try to be accurate, but I like the idea of trying to flipping. I don't think I could do it.
I think what you actually need to do is read erotica written by bisexual men. So,
Yeah, but I'd have to know that they were in fact bisexual men and believe it.
they're out there.
I believe you. I should
Find them.
probably try it. Well, I really appreciate the ending note there of talking about like all of the hot things that there are to have in erotica, and I hope this inspires you to maybe write some of your own if you've been thinking about it, or maybe read it in a slightly different way. My stuff is, as I've said, mentioned before, published in Rachel Carmen Brussels' anthology, which I will link to. One of it's in her Best Women's Erotica Volume 8. Another one is in the Big Book of Quickies. And then you can find Art of Fiction stuff.
On archive of our own at Art of Fiction. It's like artifact, but fiction.
Oh, you can see it in the title for this. So you can read our stuff online. Also, I have a lot of stories on FetLife as I be Cookie Monster. I actually have quite a number of eroticas that I read out loud on YouTube. I think they're under my real name. I think that's actually where I have the most hits. So you can see some of that there. And thank you for listening.